Welcome to Transforming NATO, a podcast exploring how NATO is refining its edge in a rapidly changing world. This series is brought to you by ACT, NATO's Allied Command Transformation. ACT is transforming NATO to ensure that the world's most successful alliance stays ready to meet the security challenges of today and tomorrow. Hi, I'm Kathy Lewis, and today our focus is the Strategic Foresight Analysis Group, or SFA. SFA is both a product and a function, and here to talk more about it is Gergay Nemeth, who is the branch head for Strategic Foresight Analysis. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathy. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful to see you. I'm so glad to have had these conversations that we're now sort of bringing to listeners about the great work that you're doing. And it really is an extraordinary time to be looking at how NATO goes about remaining relevant, effective in this new age in which we are entering. When you say strategic foresight analysis is both a product and a function, what do you mean by that?
Strategic foresight analysis is traditional function at the Allied Command Transformation, which is the future's command for the alliance, for NATO. It's a traditional function because it helps to think futures. It helps the organization, but it also helps allied countries, allied, I would say, fellow foresight experts to think futures and do it together. It provides a platform for collaborative research, collaborative thinking. It's also a product in terms of that we also have to create assessments, analysis on future trajectories to help our defense planners and our warfighting development and concept development and wargaming community to also think futures with us, use our scenarios, maybe take over some of the problem sets which we are finding in our what we call horizon scanning. And basically, we have to provide inspiration to these communities for them to do their own super important and interesting job.
You know, it strikes me that this is not a newsflash. The world is a really complex place right now. And when you think about futures planning, there are so many circumstances in which, you know, we can think about the future. We might or might not be right or wrong. How do you go about analyzing all of the possibilities and identifying the ones you think may have the greatest risk of happening, and then getting everybody to sort of agree on that as a framework for moving forward?
Exploring infinite possibilities would be super interesting, isn't it? And there is still a jury out what artificial intelligence can do in terms of improving the number of scenarios which can be plausibly assessed. That said, obviously we have our own human boundaries. We also have a given amount of pages for the strategic foresight analysis. So we had to come up with a concept to reduce complexity and the infinite scenarios into plausible future scenarios. And so we ended up initially with four scenarios to really devise scenarios. The most interesting point of this exercise is to understand what are the major variables, what are distincting these scenarios. And so the major variables, after several months of discussion, ended up to be the level of international cooperation and the extent of disruptions by what we call mostly external, impersonal, structural forces like climate breakdown. So basically, the four future scenario to our thinking is a set of disruptive drivers and then the international community's ability to respond to these disruptions and to adapt accordingly. And there is obviously and unfortunately actors in the security environment who are non-complying even to our current security environment and to our current conditions, which are, and it's not to scare people, but it's difficult to say, but those things are getting worse. And it's enough just to think of climate change, which we call climate breakdown, to emphasize the disruptiveness and the extent of this global phenomenon to the ecosystem, and eventually the reason why we are doing it, to understand how it impacts the allied forces at the end of the day. And the impacts are pretty serious, and what is also interesting and in some ways not very reassuring is that it's very difficult to draw a line and say that there is a steep increase in terms of the extremity of weather events or in terms of how the global warming is taking place. There are more of a scenarios, and even these scenarios may show asymmetric increment in themselves. So a lot of volatility, very difficult to understand whether something is happening 5 years from now or 2 months from now. And when it comes to how to design allied forces in anticipation of these challenges, it makes it very, very difficult to make the right decisions in the right time. Because if we are looking into what we call a confused security environment, it takes more effort to anticipate and understand the trajectories. And obviously now I'm emphasizing climate breakdown, but we could talk about AI or other technological trajectories. It is becoming very difficult to anticipate the right trajectories, but we have to do our utmost to do that. And in order to be precise, our approach is to work more together with allies and to do it together as a collaborative research.
Which has to be good for the whole Earth, right? I mean, if we can really pursue those strategies that will begin to attack what you say is the number one force we're really having to deal with here, which is climate breakdown, and it will have a profound effect on just about every aspect of global security and probably just about every aspect of life. So that's a really significant challenge moving forward. What are some of the other challenges that you're looking at in addition to the environment, as you think about these factors that could provide serious disruption in the years to come?
So several factors are there. One of which is worth to mention is resource scarcity, which is not really about the scarcity of a given resource per se on a global level, but mostly its inequitable distribution and availability for nations. And there are many types of resources, so we could talk about that for days. What really matters here is that there are several resources, like renewable resources, non-renewable resources, even cultivable soil is a resource in itself. And the availability of these resources is providing stability for states. And the lack of equitable availability is obviously enhancing instability. And then if the instability is taking place in the neighborhood of the alliance today or from our perspective in the future, then it's something which we have to take into account in our assessments and inform our fellow force planners accordingly. Just to say, hey, there might be a new kind of employment scenario for you in a new kind of framework. Maybe it's something different than what we used to think so far. So resources, but also resource-wise, what is interesting and also difficult to understand what will be the resource for the future. So we have in our horizon scanning efforts looked even into, you know, mining helium from asteroids, even mining on the moon. And obviously this is very sci-fi. Parts of our job is sci-fi, but parts of our job is to make our research accessible and acceptable to the wider kind of warfare development community and force planning community. But one of the resources which is going to only become more precious is knowledge, research and development, knowledge sharing. And this is one of the strong signals in our research, and this is something which also allied countries have to prepare to protect in the what we call the virtual dimension, or you can say the cyber domain. Protection of these resources will be very important, but equally sharing these resources amongst ourselves will also be very important.
You know, it strikes me that probably all the member nations in the NATO alliance are at different stages in all of this, in technology, and I guess that's part of what this futures planning is about, is to ensure or assist the NATO nations to getting to a common level of knowledge, awareness, capability, and to share what can be shared in that regard.
Yes, this is what we call futures alignment, or aligning futures thinking, because it is based on the understanding that while allied countries are obviously deliberating their own strategic assumptions with each other, and there are formal institutions and formal procedures to get agreement and also create a framework for these discussions. At the same time, forward thinking, especially long-term thinking, it's something which is usually done by allied states themselves. At the same time, as you said, there are varying capabilities. So some of the smaller countries are world champions of foresight thinking, by the way, but even some of the smaller countries or some of the mid-level countries, they may not have robust foresight institutions just yet. There is now a momentum for foresight, especially since the COVID, one big strategic shock, and then since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the other strategic shock. So there is now a big momentum, a big desire to start better understanding future trajectory. And we feel that more and more countries are interested in what we are doing. But the point, as you said, is to align our thinking, not to force our thinking on allied countries, but to continue engaging with them, discussing futures together. And this is why I said we are not the best climate expert. But if we work with allies, then we will find the best climate expert of the Western part of the world. And so it is an immense treasure for us. And this is why it's so great to work together with our allies. And I should mention also partners, because they have been extremely useful to our efforts.
We're talking with Gergai Nemat, who is the branch head of Strategic Foresight Analysis, or the SFA, function and product here at Allied Command Transformation, headquartered in Norfolk for NATO. Before we go on, we do have a number of other initiatives to get to. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to this work. Could you give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of what attracted you to this?
I served 15 years in the Hungarian Ministry of Defense. I started as an open source intelligence analyst, and then I changed horses and started to do force development. And doing force development as a civilian, so basically doing a very hard security military thing as a civilian, was very challenging, very demanding, but also very rewarding in so many ways. And so basically this is design architecture. This is designing forces, this is understanding the force requirements and informing leadership decisions to allocate resources of the nation to military hardware, training personnel and stuff. And so all of this was always somehow related with futures. I still recognize that in 2016 I read a paper which mentioned strategic foresight for the first time. And it was within the so-called NATO defense planning process, which is basically what I did for most in my professional career. And I was like, oh, there is a thing like that, strategic foresight, and it sounds so cool. Also, my nation, the Hungarians, started strategic foresight within the Ministry of Defense, but I had nothing to do with it. And that was very interesting, and I was super envious for the people who really did it. And then, yeah, time lapsed. I served in Brussels, very critical, very interesting era also for European security, Russian invasion of Ukraine, annexation of the Crimea, all the reactions by the alliance, and so on. And after Brussels, I went home and did some stuff in the national armaments, defense planning, defense policy. And thereafter, this opportunity opened, basically, to lead the strategic foresight here. That was just so great. I mean, who would not want to work at the futures headquarters of the alliance,
right,
in the United States?
So that sounds like it's an ideal fit for you.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I was, you know, a done foresight expert before I arrived, but this is a great job.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that, because I always think it's great to know what draws people to a particular area of interest. One of the other sort of forces impinging on the future has to do with both geoeconomics and polarization. And you and your researchers found a real connection between those forces. I wonder if you'd explain where those connections are, what that means.
So geoeconomics, from our perspective, is politicized economies, which are politicized because they are becoming instruments of power for national interest, which is immediately leading us to securitized economics. This is a big discussion, and the jury is still out to make the final judgment, and we are also careful with our wording in the SFA. It seems that the globalization as a whole is at least, at the very least, started to lag. The globalization of digital services, very interestingly, continuing to grow, but the globalization of trade stopped. Securitization of supply chains is happening. Protection, transparency of supply chains is an immense priority. And this is also emerging within the context of what we have, a fragmenting and increasingly fragmenting security environment. This has already been addressed by the heads of states and government in their strategy concept 2022. Regarding the long-term implications, there are some really negative forecasts about a heavily fragmented security environment, which is driven by geoeconomic interest. And then if we take some of the what we call emerging disruptive technologies, just one particular example, additive manufacturing, it's very interesting how one set of technologies can have so many almost infinite impacts on our ecosystem. Because if we have a positive future scenario where everyone is like cooperating, then additive manufacturing is an additional improvement to our efficiency, additional improvement to our output, and very likely a significantly reducing waste produced by industries, which is going to be so central, if not tackle climate change, but at least successfully adapt to it. But if we are looking into a fragmented world where strategic competition is intensifying, and I mean, we have Russia in the neighborhood, which is invading a sovereign country, so we see increasing assertiveness, violence, and obviously non-state actors are also unfortunately changing their behavior and are empowered in so many ways by modern technology. If you are taking a fragmenting scenario, additive manufacturing is something, interestingly, an enhancing factor, because it will help regions in so many ways to get away and create their own regional ecosystems, because it shortens the supply chain and it may allow you to create some of the industrial capacities and especially the supply chains which you would not be able to do without that. So regions may not that much require other regions if certain elements, aspects of the additive manufacturing is implemented, and if it's a fragmented world. And so this is why it's so important to take the right scenarios, because there are many trends which are basically trends themselves. It's a phenomenon per se, but its impact can be almost infinite, because it depends on what we call the actors in the security environment, and there are states and there are non-state actors. And in the non-state actors, it's a big basket. There are the commercial actors at the one end of the spectrum, but also there are the violent non-state actors, which the strategic concept also refers as terrorist organizations. And so this is really a wide basket, but these actors are always responding to these changes. They see opportunities and they see also risks, and they are almost univocally impacted by also the disruptions. So climate breakdown, for example, is not only impacting us. On the contrary, it tends to impact countries in regions which are already fragile. So in some cases, it is accelerating instability. And geoeconomic competition is also, in so many ways, what we have seen in the Russian invasion of Ukraine is that the food crisis has had a serious impact on Europe in terms of it had an additional impact on the inflation, it created market asymmetries. But it is nowhere comparable to the impact what it had created in the developing world. If a country is on the wrong spot in the supply chain, which are, as we are talking, globally interconnected and interdependent, and in a wrong spot in terms of climate breakdown, and might not have the capacities to start adapting to the fourth industrial revolution and other things like that, then it's difficult. And this is a difficult future. And then these countries obviously would need to be helped, assisted, and equally they may become fragile and create further fragmentation in the security
environment. They may align themselves with nations or non-state actors who can help them get what they want, even though that may be very problematic for peace moving forward.
Yeah, so that's another super interesting big discussion. There is a theory of exit nations, and it's basically that certain nations are choosing exit from the international system because either they don't want or they cannot comply with the rules. And so if you don't have a functioning state, then you may become an exit nation just as easily as if you don't want to comply, which is what we see, unfortunately, with increasing frequency.
One of the recurring themes I've heard in this whole conversation has been around competition. And this seems to be the way of the world moving forward.
We really would like to explore opportunities as well. And there are opportunities for global cooperation. Space traffic management, regulation of what we call the global commons. These are atmosphere, high seas, undersea, the management, regulation of these commons. Also, ethical standards for artificial intelligence. Also, assistance for developing nations. Also, collective efforts for climate mitigation of the climate breakdown. So there are many, many, and not to talk about, obviously, tackling regional instabilities. So there are many opportunities. But our baseline is the strategy concept 2022 when it comes to intent of the actors. So we don't, because infinite futures are already very difficult, we had like 170 trends. And if we add also variety of actors' intent, that would have been impossible to handle. So what we thought is that who would be better suited to understand the intent of the actors in the alliance security environment than heads of states and governments themselves. And so they addressed the strategic concept, they addressed the strategic environment in the strategic concept, and they have agreed on a view of certain actors' intent. And I will consciously not name names here because we don't need that for this conversation. And so we took it over as it is, and we extrapolate. But we also add that there is always an avenue for more opportunity, and there is an increasing need for more cooperation.
Yes.
Otherwise, it will be difficult. And so how is it related to force designs? We will have a second phase of this research, which is called Future Operating Environment. And basically, now that we have mapped what we call an evolving security environment, we want to dive into understanding how a future kind of an operating environment 20 years from now look like in a state of what we call pervasive competition. So this is competition not only on the traditional domains, this is air, land, sea, but also in the non-traditional domains like cyber and space. Importantly, cyber is a non-geographical domain. Space is more or less a non-geographical domain. It is a physical domain still with different rule sets. So if actors will start, and they are already starting, they have already started long ago, exploit these new domains and also the new global commons, then it will have serious implications to our future force designs, because we have to understand this environment into which we are developing our own forces.
And, you know, I wonder, we've had such an interesting and wide-ranging conversation. We've talked about some of the challenges that are ahead. You've talked about some of these marvelous opportunities that are also on the horizon. On balance, how do you look at the future as somebody who really gets to see everything? Are you on balance optimistic, or where are you with that?
I will tell you one story, but you will cut it out, I'm sure, which is that when we did the peer review for the SFA, we had a lot of people whom really smart people whom we asked to read it. And then one of them was looking really sick on one of the morning. And I was like, what happened with you? And he said, well, I read the strategic foresight analysis and I couldn't sleep.
Oh, wow.
And my wife told me, hey, never happened with you that you couldn't sleep. And he was like, yeah, but I read the strategic foresight. And so this is a story which emphasizes the importance of positive messages as well. Now, our problem is that a positive word requires a different force design, and it's not the most demanding scenario. And we are looking for the most demanding scenario. Our approach is risk-oriented. We have to understand how actors will use disruptions as opportunities, how they will exploit instabilities, how they will seek for blind spots in the new domains, in the new global commons. This is why it's very difficult to create a positive story. That said, we have identified several problem sets and several uncertainties, which we are going to continue researching. And our own General Levine, the Supreme Allied Commander for Transformation, has already also asked us to focus more on opportunities, how we can cooperate with strategic competitors even more efficiently. I think this is clear for everyone that even in a most demanding scenario, we are going to need global cooperation a lot. At the same time, our own job is not to address global cooperation or the avenues of it. Our own job is to inform our defense planners to make the best possible decisions with their force designs. And once again, it requires pessimistic stories and demanding scenarios.
Well, if there is any organization that would be able to guide us through these pessimistic circumstances and these opportunities that lie ahead, it is Allied Command Transformation. Gerga, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Gerga Németh is the branch head for the Strategic Foresight Analysis activity at Allied Command Transformation. That's it for this edition of Transforming NATO, a podcast exploring how NATO is refining its edge in a rapidly changing world. This series is brought to you by ACT, NATO's Allied Command Transformation. You can learn more about ACT at act.nato.int. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.